We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 39, verses 32 to 37. So in the last class, it was verse 9 to 31. We read more verses than we anticipated. And so from this class, we'll start verse 32. Srinam eva mudanti namurite savitar yata akrulas charyam asa kitamai. But even as the gopis cried out in this way, Akura, having at sunrise performed his morning worship and other duties, began to drive a chariot. Mukam karati vachava bandhanam kayate dhinam yathapantamaham mande sivarajanachayanam om jnana timiranasya jnanjara sarakayam So what do you remember from last class? Yes.
The gopis were very distressed and they told Krishna that if we were your wives, it would be okay because it would be your property. But you're destroying others' property.
You're destroying others' property, so therefore you should not leave. Yes. Yes. Everybody fainted, is it? Yeah, even Akura fainted. Everybody fainted. Yeah, he brought the gopis back to consciousness and they met. He met with them before he left. Yes, he sent Balaram to go get Krishna back on the chariot. Yeah, it seems like Balaram was in charge at that point of the departure. He was, yes. Okay, anything else? Okay, so we'll continue. Verse 32. Akura is driving the chariot. Purport. So the last thing we heard was the gopis were crying, Damodar Govinda Madhava. And then now Akura is driving the chariot, even though they're crying. Purport. According to some Vaishnava authorities, Akura offended the gopis by not consoling them when he took Krishna to Mathura. And because of this offense, Akura was later forced to leave Dwaraka and be separated from Krishna during the episode of the Samantaka jewel. At that time, Akura had to take up an ignoble residence in Varanasi. Apparently, Mother Yashoda and the other residents of Vrindavan were not crying like the gopis, for they sincerely believed Krishna would be coming back within a few days. So some say they weren't, and others say they were crying. And so... Verse 33, led by Nanda Maharaj, the coward men followed behind Lord Krishna in their wagons. The men brought along many offerings for the king, including clay pots filled with ghee and other milk products. 34, with his glances, Lord Krishna somewhat pacified the gopis, and they also followed behind for some time. Then hoping he would give them some instruction, they stood still. So nectar devotion... Chapter 30 describes when Krishna was going to Mathura on the chariot driven by Akura, Yashoda and all the gopis came to try to forbid him to pass and to block his way. At that time, Radharani was so perturbed that in a faltering voice, she requested Mother Yashoda to please stop Akura. And in chapter 28, indirect of nectar of devotion, indirect moistened existential ecstatic love is described in the following statement. Krishna, who is also called Purushottama, is to the eyes of Mother Yashoda, just like the cloud is to the eyes of the Chataki bird. When Krishna had been brought to Mathura, Mother Yashoda, being very anxious and angry, began to rebuke the king of Mathura. So Krishna book. In spite of Krishna's asking the gopis not to obstruct their way, they all surrounded the chariot and stood to see Krishna with pitiable eyes. Krishna was very affected upon seeing the plight of the gopis, but his duty was to start for Mathura, for this was foretold by Narada. Krishna, therefore, consoled the gopis. He told them that they should not be aggrieved. He was coming back very soon after finishing his business, but they could not be persuaded to disperse. The chariot, however, began to head west, and as it proceeded, the minds of the gopis followed it as far as possible. Verse 35. As he departed, the best of the Yadus saw how the gopis were lamenting, and thus he consoled them by sending a messenger with this loving promise, "I will return." So how did Krishna fulfill this promise? We will find out in chapter 46. The Acharyas give various reasons why Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan. One reason that Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan was he had promised the residents of Vrindavan, I shall return. This is verse 35. And also in chapter 45, when he says goodbye to Nanda, he says, "Jashtam Eshyama, we will come back to see you and Mother Yashoda." So how did he fulfill it? By sending Uddhava. He didn't go himself. He sent Uddhava. Immediately after Kamsa was killed, and Nanda Maharaj was going back, he went back without Krishna, and then immediately Krishna will send Uddhava with a message for all of them. He could not break his promise to Vasudeva and Devaki to finally spend some time with them after they had suffered for so many years. So he had to stay in Mathura. Now, Vishnath Chakravarti on this verse says, seeing the pain of the gopis, the best of the Yadus, who is now inclined to protect the Yadus, consoled them by sending through messengers thousands of assurances to increase their faith so that they would regain full consciousness. Dautyakai is in the plural, messengers. Ka is added to indicate the messages were full of compassion. "I will return quickly. O gopis, like you, I am also subject to the worst broken heart. I am going to Mathura. By maintaining life through the licking with the tongue of my intelligence, your laughing sweet glances of honey, rare to the three worlds. If I do not return the day after tomorrow, then you and I will both not be able to maintain our lives. But if I live because of a long lifespan or because of expectations of reunion, this life will be more suffering than a million deaths." Such were his words mixed with the nectar of prema. So Krishna was saying, it's not just that you're suffering, I'm also suffering. And we will hear more about that next year when we will hear about Dwarka Lila. Krishna is in Dwarka with his wives. And the whole night, he cannot sleep. He's just crying out, "Radhe, Radhe, Radhe," in the names of the gopis. And Rukmini is hearing this, and she's very upset. Why he cannot be happy here with me? But actually, he was always thinking of the gopis. Verse 36. Sending their minds after Krishna, the gopis stood as motionless as figures in a painting. They remained there as long as the flag atop the chariot was visible, and even until they could no longer see the dust raised by the chariot wheels. 37. The gopis then turned back, without hope that Govinda would ever return to them. Full of sorrow, they began to spend their days and nights chanting about the pastimes of their beloved. There's one anecdote about Subal, a friend of Krishna, Nectar of Devotion, chapter 29. When Krishna left Vrindavan, Subal, his intimate friend, decided to leave also. While leaving, Subal was contemplating that without Krishna, there is no longer any pleasure to be found in Vrindavan. The analogy is given that as the bees go away from a flower that has no honey, Subal left Vrindavan when he found there was no longer any relishable transcendental pleasure there. And there's one at Govardhan, one Gopa, Lota Baba, who's still waiting. Krishna told him, just wait. And he's waiting for Krishna to return from Mathura. He's waiting there at Govardhan. Lota Baba. Pardon me? No, Lota. Lota. Like Lota. He has a Lota. Or I don't know how they pronounce it. Different way. Lota. Lota. They pronounce it. Oh, return. Lauta, okay, not Lota. I was also thinking Lota. Lauta means we'll return. Okay, Lauta Baba. There is this one cowherd boyfriend that is still, if you want to go to see him, he's at, was it Punchari? At the end of Govardhan when you turn around the corner. Lauta Baba. Lauta. Okay, so here I'm going to read a little bit from Mathura meets Vrindavan about separation. What is actually happening when there is separation from Krishna? So viraha, vipralamba means external separation. Krishna is not present by sight. Krishna is away. So this is what's happening to the Brajbasis. Krishna is away, but internally he's in the heart. That is viraha. Viraha means externally away, but internally very close in the heart. Radha and the gopis desire to always keep Krishna in their heart. So how can it be done? Unless Krishna is away and they feel the acute pangs of separation, they cannot keep Krishna in their heart. So when he's there, then he's face to face and they don't keep Krishna in their heart. But when he's away, then he's very present in their mind and in their heart. Unless Krishna is away and they feel the acute pangs of separation, they cannot keep Krishna in their heart. And so here, listen to this, these two sentences. There's something you should keep fixed in your memory. At the time of union, separation is in the heart. So that is what's happening here. Like they're there with Krishna, but separation is in the heart. And even when they're enjoying with Krishna, they're always thinking, oh, he may leave at any moment. So at the time of union, separation is in the heart. And at the time of external separation, union is relished in the heart. So union and separation are always together. When Krishna is externally away, when there's external separation, union is in the heart. And when Krishna is externally present, there is union, then there's separation in the heart. They're always worried, oh, he may leave any moment. So this is viraha. Yeah. Therefore, they keep their most beloved Krishna in the core of heart and relish conjugal mellow. The happiness and taste they get from that separation is millions of times greater than that of union. Therefore, viraha, separation, is the topmost platform of conjugal love, viraha. Okay, again, you want to hear that? All right, I'll just read those two sentences. At the time of union, separation is in the heart. And at the time of external separation, union is relished in the heart. Okay? Isn't that a wonderful way to understand separation? That's what is actual separation. Union and separation are together. Always. When we chant the holy name, we're in separation from Krishna, but by chanting, there's union with Krishna. Because Krishna is there, Radharani is there, and our guru is there, because our guru is always with Krishna. So when Mahaprabhu, he was in the emotion, Radha Bhav, he was in the emotions, feeling emotions of Radharani. So when Lord Chaitanya was in Jagannath Puri, he was feeling these same emotions that the gopis felt when Krishna left Vrindavan, always crying, shedding tears. Radharani gave up eating and sleeping and became very skinny, always thinking of Krishna, dying condition. It seemed she would die and leave her body. So these were her feelings. Mahaprabhu is feeling exactly the same, crying for Krishna, because Radhabhav is predominating in his mind. Whatever she was saying, then Lord Chaitanya was saying the same thing. Condemning providence. He was condemning providence. So these same things we'll find when we read Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Krishna, well, here's another very interesting comment on the gopis. When Krishna left, the gopis became very distressed, feeling intense pangs of separation from Krishna. They said, we cannot live. We'll die without Krishna. They lay down in front of the wheels of Akura's chariot. Let the wheels roll on our body. Let us die here. Why shall we survive? Krishna is leaving Brajabhumi. We cannot survive. They had developed so much love for Krishna This is manmana bhava, day and night, 24 hours, thinking of Krishna. And so this manmana bhava madbhakto, the gopis are the actual embodiment of that verse. So now we're going to read how Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. And there will be many ways that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, and there will be ways that he leaves Vrindavan, and then there will be reasons why he leaves Vrindavan. So we'll hear all of these now from this book, Krishna Sangati. And the essence of this book is that Krishna never leaves and he's always coming back, and he's always in Vrindavan. So first we have to understand, what is this Aprakat Lila? Aprakat Lila is eternally taking place in the Aprakat Dham, Goloka Vrindavan, in the spiritual sky, beyond the vision of the souls living in the material world. When the unmanifested pastimes become visible in Prakat Dham, this terrestrial, the earthly counterpart of Aprakat Dham, they are known as Prakat Lila. In Prakat Lila, Krishna and his associates are visible to everyone, even conditioned souls. The description of Krishna's departure from Vrindavan takes place in his Prakat Lila. So this, what we're hearing in Bhagavatam, is a description of the departure of Krishna in the Prakat Lila. We're not hearing about the Aprakat Lila. So from the Acharyas and from this book, we can hear a little bit more about what's happening in the Aprakat Lila. In this pastime, everyone, from his eternal associates to conditioned souls, observed Krishna leaving Vrindavan. In fact, even Krishna was convinced he had gone to Mathura. So that is, externally, everyone was seeing that Krishna left Vrindavan. But in his Aprakat Lila, Krishna remained in Vrindavan, as he does eternally. In view of these two perspectives, Prakat and Aprakat, how should we understand Krishna's departure from Vrindavan? It should be understood in this way. Krishna simultaneously went from Vrindavan to Mathura in his Prakat pastimes and stayed in Vrindavan in his Aprakat pastimes. So simultaneously he went and he stayed, because there's two simultaneous pastimes, Prakat and Aprakat, are going on at the same time. So how are we to comprehend the simultaneous occurrence of two contradictory events? He left and he didn't leave. So Prabhupada quotes Jiva Goswami, "Unless you accept the inconceivable power of the Supreme Lord, there is no possibility of understanding him." Thus, in order to understand something that defies logic and our experience, we must accept Krishna's inconceivable potencies, which effortlessly harmonize simultaneous contradictory events in what Srila Prabhupada calls two kinds of existence, the manifested and the unmanifested. So the manifested that everyone is seeing is the Prakat Lila, and the unmanifested that not everyone is seeing is the Aprakat Lila. So two things are going on at the same time. So that's one way that Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. In his Aprakat Lila, Krishna never leaves. Of course, Sanatana Goswami says he leaves, but we'll hear about that later too. That even in his Aprakat Lila, he appears to leave. We'll see how actually it's not like he leaves Vrindavan. We'll hear about that a little later. So there's another thing you can consider to understand his pastime of leaving Vrindavan. Krishna in his original form, with all the qualities of Godhead, appears only in Vrindavan. All the other forms of Krishna, whether in Mathura, Dwaraka, or any other place outside Vrindavan, are expansions of the original form of Shyamasundara in Braj. So these outside Vrindavan forms of Krishna do not reveal all the qualities of Godhead. In fact, in his Prakat Lila, even when Krishna is seen by everyone to leave Vrindavan, he does not actually leave Vrindavan. His expansion does. Okay, so that's another point, is that Krishna, full with all the opulences, is completely full only in Braj. And if you see him leaving, he's actually not leaving his expansion. In Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwaraka, Krishna displays different natures to reciprocate different moods cherished by his associates in those respective dhams. This principle holds for both the prakat and aprakat dhams. For instance, devotees whose love is dominated by awe of Krishna's opulence reside in the realm of opulence, Dwaraka, whereas devotees whose love is drawn to Krishna's sweetness reside in the land of sweetness, Vrindavan. Thus, in Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwaraka, Krishna is said to display three different natures, and the distinct nature of each place arises from the distinct qualities Krishna manifests in each place. In Dwaraka, Krishna, although complete in every way, does not manifest all his divine qualities. What quality does he not manifest in Dwaraka that we can think of, that he manifests in Vrindavan? It's a really simple one. Playing the flute. He doesn't play a flute in Dwaraka. He plays the flute only in Vrindavan. So that's one thing. You'll never hear Krishna playing his flute in Dwaraka. No. Yeah. Well, Srila Prabhupada's special mercy. Rukmini Dwarkadish. Yes. We'll hear about that next year, actually, if you're back. That he did have a flute at some point when he was in Dwaraka. But it wasn't in Dwaraka, it was in Nava Vrindavan, New Vrindavan. In Dwaraka, there's a place, a replica of Vrindavan. And so sometimes he would visit there, and in that place he had he got a flute, actually.
Did he speak of Pesach in Dwaraka?
I don't think so. I don't know.
He has not Pesach in Dwaraka.
I don't think so. It's not the decoration that a king would wear. A peacock feather is for the cowherd boys.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he has different natures. In Mathura, he's more complete, for he manifests all his qualities, though not fully. But in Vrindavan, he's most complete, for there he manifests all the qualities of Godhead in full. So the conclusion of learned Vaishnavas and revealed scriptures is that Krishna is the most complete personality of Godhead only in Vrindavan. And this is what they mean when they say Shyamasundara, the original form of Godhead, never leaves Vrindavan. For only in Vrindavan do his devotees possess the quality of love that makes him display all his personal qualities in full. So another way, that you won't see the Krishna that we see in Vrindavan, you won't see him anywhere else, because nowhere else will he manifest the complete qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there's a verse from Yamala Tantra describing difference between Krishna's appearance in Vrindavan and appearance in Mathura and Dwaraka. Krishnanyayar sambhuta yapura sostyatapura Vrindavanam parityaja sukachinaiva gachati. Krishna, known as Yadukumar, is Vasudev Krishna. He's different from the Krishna who is the son of Nanda Maharaj. Yadukumar Krishna manifests his pastimes in the cities of Mathura and Dwaraka. A Krishna, son of Nanda Maharaj, never leaves Vrindavan at any time. This raises another question. If the original form of Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, what happens in his manifest pastime when the time arrives for him to leave Raj? So if he never leaves, then what happens when he's leaving? The answer is that Shyamasundara rides on a Kuru's chariot to the boundary of Braj, but goes no further. Krishna's expansion as Vasudeva crosses the border of Vrindavan and continues his pastimes in Mathura and Dwaraka. So he only goes up to the border, and then his expansion continues. Vasudeva, from the border of Vrindavan, Vasudeva. As Vasudeva's pastimes unfold in Prakat Dwaraka, Shyamasundara stays in Vrindavan in his uprakat form and enjoys his uprakat pastimes. So in the manifest pastimes, he goes to Dwaraka. In uprakat, he remains in Vrindavan. During those times, however, the Brajbasis in prakat Vrindavan accept the pastimes Krishna has with them to be merely dreams. So even with the people who are in prakat lila, Krishna is having pastimes with them. Although he's in Dwaraka. Krishna's in Dwaraka, but as Shyamasundara, he's still in Vrindavan, and he's still having pastimes with those who are in the Prakat Lila. Prakat Lila. Yes. He's in Aprakat Lila, but he's having pastimes with those who are in Prakat Lila, the manifest Lila. Those who are here living in Vrindavan, he is having pastimes with them. But they, it's like nighttime and they're dreaming, and they think it's a dream. They think it's dreams, or daydream. In the day, they think it's just a daydream, and at night, they think it's a night dream. But actually, he's having pastimes with them.
Even now.
Yeah, even now. We're talking about now, Prakat Lila means when Krishna was here. So, they think it's just a dream. Thus they display even more intense symptoms of separation from Shyama Sundar. Rishbasi's love and separation draws Vasudev Krishna back to Vrindavan. At the border of Braj, Shyama Sundar appears from his Prakat Lila and Vasudev emerges into his body. Krishna, in his original form, enters Vrindavan again to be visible in his Prakat Lila. So sometimes he would come back to visit. And Vasudeva Krishna would disappear at the border and Shyama Sundar Krishna would appear. To review this section, in Krishna's Prakat Lila, he only appears to leave Vrindavan. What actually happens is Krishna's Vasudeva expansion continues his pastimes outside Vrindavan. His original feature, Shyama Sundar, tied by bonds of pure affection to his original dham and original associates, does not leave Vrindavan. Instead, Shyama Sundar enters his Aprakat Lila and stays forever in his Aprakat dham. Same principle applies to any of Krishna's dhams. When he is not visible in a particular dham in Prakat Lila, he's always present in his Aprakat Lila in a state of completeness complementary to that particular dham. So from this it appears that even when he leaves Dwaraka, he's still there in his Aprakat Lila in Dwaraka. Externally, Krishna appears to come and go, but from the Aprakat point of view, he's eternally present in each of his dhams. So he's going from one dham, and then he's going into their heart, as it says, that real, when he's externally apart, then he goes in their heart. And then when he's there face to face, then they're always there feeling, oh, he may leave. Because Krishna was not even staying in Dwaraka, he was going to Hastinapur, he was going to different places during his pastimes. And we'll hear a little bit about those places also. So now, what is a difference between the Prakat Lila and Aprakat Lila, and the Prakat Dham and the Aprakat Dham? Makes them different. So one thing is that the apparent subservience of Prakat Lila and Prakat Dham to the influence of material time is one of the features that distinguishes them. So it appears that the Prakat Lila is subservient to time. There's day, there's night, there's seasons, there's like Krishna, he's a baby and then he grows up and then he leaves. So time appears to have some influence in the Prakat Lila. And here the example. His relationship with Nandini Yashoda appeared to begin with his birth because the pastime manifests on the backdrop of material nature and material time. In Aprakat Lila, however, because Krishna never takes birth, the parental mellow is eternal. It has no beginning or end. Freedom from constraints in the unmanifested realm increases the scope of Krishna's pastimes there. In the words of Rupa Goswami, whatever Lord Krishna does in his Prakat pastimes, beginning with his childhood, he does many thousands of times in his Aprakat pastimes. So some people, I've heard some devotees say, oh, he doesn't have Vatsalya Ras because he's eternally a youth in the spiritual world. So no, he actually does have all these things when he wants. So we'll see here another the difference, and this is a difference here when he's born here in the Prakat Lila. He looks like he goes from a small baby up to a youth. So he appears to grow, and until he becomes his original eternal form of Shyama Sundar. And then he never ages beyond that, which proves he's not actually controlled by time. So what is the difference between his aging in Prakat Lila and Aprakat is that in the Prakat Lila, he moves through the cycle of ages one time, concluding with youth. and then he disappears. Whereas in the Uppercut Leela, he's always eternal youth, but repeatedly displays all other ages whenever his pastimes call for them. So he's eternally a youth, but he can also show his babyhood, his childhood, and other things, if there's a pastime, if he feels like it. And he can also show those, he can manifest those in the spiritual world as well. The Uppercut Leela may afford Krishna greater freedom to display his pastimes, but for the conditioned souls, the Prakat Leela has distinct advantages. Most obvious of them is the opportunity it gives the souls conditioned by material nature to verify through their senses an otherwise imperceptible phenomenon via manifested sports of the Lord. So we can see, the example is, we can hear about Krishna's pastimes, study his teachings in Gita, and see, like here in Vrindavan, we can see the relics of his Prakat Leela. So that is very inspiring for us. So what happens to the Prakat Dham at the conclusion of Prakat Leela? The Prakat Dham manifests in this world by Krishna's causeless mercy. And when it comes to when his Prakat Leela comes to an end, the Dham becomes unmanifest by entering into the Aprakat Dham. An example of that, the creations of Vishvakarma or gifts from the demigods in Dwarka will return to their original places. And by Krishna's grace, certain portions of Prakat Dham remain in this world visible. Like we have Krishna's palace in Dwarka, deity of Bhuteshwar Mahadev in Mathura, Nanda Maharaj's palace in Gokula are examples of relics that continue to be visible even now. And so we can see these things. The statement that Krishna resides only in his dhams. Okay, so here's another question, which is not about Krishna leaving Vrindavan, but it also has some relevance. There's a question, how can Krishna be said to be all-pervasive if he lives only in his dhams? And second, if Krishna lives only in his dham, how are his travels outside Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka to be understood? What was the status of those lands Krishna traversed while moving between his dhams, or of the places he visited outside the dhams, like Hastinapur and these different places? What is their status? Are they part of the dham or not? That is the question. And what about the places he went through? Gujarat, he went through so many places on his way from Dwarka to Hastinapur, or on his way he went to Maharashtra to kidnap Rukmini. So what about Amaravati, where Rukmini was living? What about all these places that he went to? The answer, first question, the all-pervasiveness is described, refers to his being all-pervading by dint of his potencies, not his original form. So he may be all-pervading, but he lives in the Dham. That's where he stays. And the second question answers, the lands Krishna traverses when he travels between Dwarka and Vrindavan, as well as the other places he visits, like Mithila or Hastinapur, are not part of the material world. Did you know that? Hastinapur is not part of the material world, and Mithila. And even where he went through, it's all Dham, India. They are extensions of Vrindavan, Mathura, or Dwarka. So he has a little nice footnote here, which I'm not going to look up, just see where he got this from. The spiritualization of other lands can be seen in two ways. First, Krishna's dhams, which are none different from him by dint of their being, expansions of his spiritual energy, are as all-pervasive as he is. Thus his dhams extend themselves to accommodate Krishna's pastimes. So Jiva Goswami in his commentary on Brahma Samhita quotes Hari Vamsa regarding the all-pervading nature of the Dham. He explains the influence of Krishna's inconceivable internal potency makes it possible for the Dham to be all-pervading. Just as the petals of the Dham open and close to facilitate Krishna's movements, so the Dham, being all-pervading, serves him with its unlimited resources by expanding beyond its boundaries to include those places Krishna travels to. So all these places are extensions of the Dham. So that's one point, how the Dham expands, opens and closes. And what was the example we heard about in the Rasa Leela? That the Dham was opening and closing.
The lotus petals.
Yes.
The
What was the specific? Yes? You remember? No.
The lotus opening.
Yeah.
The gopis could get within a second.
Radharani. Yeah, when Krishna blew his flute, then the dam closed so that Radharani and the gopis, they could travel like very far distance from Yavat all the way to Vanshivat in less than a second. So that was an example of the dam closing. Now, the second point about the spiritualization of other places, wherever Krishna goes, he turns the place into a dam. So if Krishna goes to Hastinapur, Hastinapur becomes a dam. He goes to Mathila. If wherever he travels, it becomes a dam. And so that's another point that he, as we heard in Bhagavatam, Tirti Kurvanti Tirtani, Tirta Bhuta Swayam Vibho. Wherever you go, you turn every place. And that was the same with Lord Chaitanya. The Dvaita said, Tumi Jaha She Vrindavan. Wherever you are, that is Vrindavan. So, that is an important point. Now another point we will read about here. Now, again, when Krishna leaves Prakat Braj, he enters into Aprakat Braj. Vasudeva Krishna, known as a resident of Dwarka, occasionally returns for visits. At those times, Shamsundar appears from his Aprakat Dham and Vasudeva emerges. So we already said that. So Shamasundar appears to return. Finally, when the manifest Leela comes to an end, Krishna leaves Prakat Braj and enters his unmanifested dham. Krishna's leaving Vrindavan in the Prakat Leela means he gives up his status as a Brijabasi. In that sense, he really leaves Vrindavan. But the picture in Aprakat Braj is different. In Aprakat Leela, Krishna lives forever in Vrindavan, giving bliss to his associates. When he leaves, it is only occasionally to answer the call of duty, but he quickly returns to resume his pastimes of a cowherd. In other words, in Aprakat Leela, Krishna is eternally a resident of Vrindavan, a Brijbasi, who occasionally visits other places. So this is the big difference between Prakat Leela and Aprakat Leela, that here he appears to leave. Of course, he doesn't even leave Prakat Dham. He never leaves Prakat also, because he stays in his bhava expansion. But in the Aprakat Leela, he appears to leave for a short time, but he comes back very quickly, just for a visit. Now here, you can't say it's just for a visit. It's 100 years. You can't say that, oh, he's just going for a visit to Mathura and Dwarka. He's gone for 100 years. So he's spending much more time in the Aprakat Leela in Dwarka than he is in Vrindavan. But in the Aprakat Leela, it's not like that. He comes back immediately, very fast. In short, since the Aprakat Braj is eternal, even if Krishna briefly leaves to go to Mathura, he at once returns. In that sense, he's eternally present in Vrindavan and never leaves. The same can be said for Krishna's eternal comings and goings in Aprakat, Mathura, and Dwarka. He actually remains a resident of those Aprakat dhams, although he may occasionally leave to perform some special duty. So Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka, he's eternally living there, but sometimes he may occasionally go for a very short time to visit or have some special duty. So that, we should understand, is the difference between Prakat and Aprakat. And we will see this when we get to chapter 45 in a couple of weeks, that when he sends Nanda home without him, then we'll see that he actually also goes with him. In Aprakat Leela, he will go back to Vrindavan with Nanda. But not in Prakat Leela, it'll take 100 years. It'll take much, much longer. So why did Krishna leave? Let us hear some reasons why from the Acharyas. How and when did the resolve to leave Vrindavan appear in Krishna's mind? Learned Vaishnavas say, Krishna was provoked to go to Mathura by the 11-year constant stream of demons sent by Kamsa. And because the evil king would not come to Vrindavan to face Krishna man to man, Krishna had to go to Mathura to kill him. And after killing comes. So Krishna stayed away from Vrindavan to dispose of many other demons like Jarasandha. Had Vrindavan been the base from which Krishna fulfilled his mission of annihilating the demons, the intrusions of their armies into Braj would have constantly violated the tranquility of its divine pastures. So here's one reason, because there were so many demons, and they would have come. Now, once he started his Dwarka Lila, they didn't just come like in different shapes. They came with their armies, huge armies, to Mathura and to Dwarka. And he didn't want these armies in Braj. It would have destroyed the peaceful atmosphere. And number two, another point, the Brijabasis would have been in perpetual anxiety for his safety. So just imagine if they saw Jarasandha's 23 Akshauhinis or 18, whatever it was, and Krishna alone there fighting all these soldiers, how could they, what would they would have fainted. After all, Krishna's real mission was to protect his devotees, of whom the Brijabasis were dearmost. Naturally, then, the desire to save Vrindavan from the attacks of his enemies was foremost in his mind. In fact, that was the main reason Hari decided to leave Vrindavan, to preserve the natural, peaceful home of the Brijabasis. So there's two footnotes here. It means he got it. You have those there, or where he got this from? It is chapter 7 and 8 of Departure for Mathura, chapter 1. 7 and 8. Yeah, where did he get this? The main reason Hari decided to leave Vrindavan was to protect, to preserve the peaceful home of the Brijabasis. Sankalpa Kalpa Druma. Okay, Jiva Goswami. I'm reading this here, but he's giving references in the back, and he's looking them up. 97. You just have to read the whole book. And had the Brijabasis, out of love, proposed they live with Krishna Mathura. Now, see, this is another thing. One devotee even brought up in break. Why didn't, Mathura is so close by. Why can't they just live with him in Mathura? He would have had plenty of answers. Krishna said, When Jarasandha and other demons attack Mathura, I'll have to meet their challenge. At such times, I will not be able to protect you properly. Better you all stay here, safe in Braj. And the Brijabasis say, then we will visit you regularly. After all, Mathura is not far from Vrindavan. And then Krishna says, if you were to come back and forth to visit me, then my enemies would come to know of our mutual love, and just to spite me, they would destroy Braj. So if his enemies saw, constant travel back and forth, they saw the Brijabasis coming, then they would go and destroy Braj just to make Krishna unhappy. And the Brijabasis said, but how will we live without you? And Krishna says, you don't have to come to Mathura. I will come to you. I will return. And Brijabasis said, we know your tricky dealings with the truth. How can we believe you? Krishna said, oh, my beloved kin, be patient. After Jarasandha and a host of other demons are dead, I will make you happy. Once again, I will be your Gopal, the herder of your cows. Please believe me. So as he lay in bed at night, Krishna rehearsed arguments like these until his resolve was firm and his plan clear. He would take advantage of Akura's visit and go to Mathura. So, another place they will give, perhaps another reason. So first reason again is given here, free the Brijabasis from the persecution of his enemies. Now there's another reason why he left. He had observed that his enemies were not the only threat to the Brijabasis. Another threat stalked the homes, groves, and barns of Braj. It was the very presence of Krishna and the effect it had upon the Brijabasis. That threat dwarfed the menace created by the demons. Govinda noted, the Brijabasis are addicted to being with me, seeing me, touching me, and rendering service to me. Indeed, I am their supreme happiness. And when they cannot see me, they are overpowered by love. They faint, forget their bodies, ignore their surroundings, and neglect their very existence. Such conditions are dangerous, even for ordinary persons. Separated from me, the Brijabasis become mad and almost die from pain. And when we again meet, their pain doubles. Out of fear, again we shall separate. So this is his second reason. He says, if I come there, I can't stay there. I'm going to have to leave again. And they're going to know it. And when I'm with them, they'll be always feeling, oh, when is he going to leave? When is he going to leave? And he does leave. He goes back to visit, and then he does leave. And then their pain increases double. So that's the second reason why Krishna did not want to go back to visit the Brijbasis. What wonderful love the Brijbasis have for me. It never wanes, whether we are together or separated. But it seems they suffer less when we are apart, so I cannot see how my presence in Brij benefits the Brijbasis. So therefore he left Vrindavan. And of course he did return many times. But again, the pathetic scene would be, he didn't leave, actually, and the other times he left, it wasn't like he got on a chariot and left. He just vanished. Like he would be having the Rasalila with the gopis when he came back. And then he would disappear, but then they couldn't find him, and that was it. He didn't come back. He was gone back to Dwarka or Mathura. And so that's more painful than if he's, okay, we know he's away, but then he's here, and then he just goes again. Oh, so that's another reason why he didn't come back. So Prabhupada talks about separation. He quotes this verse, Vrindavanam Pritaja Param Ekam Nagachati. Krishna does not even go one step from Vrindavan. He's so attached to Vrindavan. Prabhupada said, so how is it we see Krishna left Vrindavan and went so far away to Mathura and didn't return for so many years? And Prabhupada says, no, Krishna actually did not leave Vrindavan. However, since Krishna seemed to leave Vrindavan, all the inhabitants were simply thinking of Krishna and crying. That was their business. Yashoda, Nanda, Radharani, the gopis, cows, calves, cowherd boys, their only business was to think of Krishna and cry in separation. And so Prabhupada said that was their only service. When Krishna was away, crying, only crying. Krishna can be felt more acutely in separation. That is Lord Chaitanya's teaching, to love Krishna in separation. He has sung, Shinjaitam Jagatsaram Govinda Virahename. Everything is vacant without Govinda, without Krishna. That is the highest perfection. When we see everything is nothing and only Krishna consciousness is there, that is the highest. And that is the gopis. They could not forget Krishna for a single moment. When Krishna is going to the forest with his cows and calves, the gopis at home were disturbed in their mind. Oh, Krishna is walking barefoot. So many stones will prick his lotus feet, so soft. We think our breasts hard when Krishna puts his lotus feet on them. Absorbed in these thoughts and crying. They were so anxious to see Krishna return home. In the evening, they're standing on the roof watching. Now, Krishna is coming back with his cows and friends. This is Krishna consciousness. Krishna cannot be absent from a devotee when he is absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. And this is the process of Krishna consciousness. So this is from a lecture, Kunti Devi. So Kunti Devi was in the presence of Krishna and he was leaving Hastinapur to go back to Dwarka. So she was very anxious. She was feeling she was in union with Krishna, but separation in the heart. Because she knew Krishna was going to leave very soon. So this is the teaching. Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya's teaching is Vipralamba Seva. He's shown this by his practical life. He was searching for Krishna, crying, tears coming like torrents of rain, and he was feeling everything vacant for want of Krishna. So Prabhupada said, there are two stages, Sambhog and Vipralamba. When Krishna is personally present, embracing, that is Sambhog. And when separation, that is Vipralamba. So our teaching is in separation. So Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita said that Lord Chaitanya, an advanced person in Krishna consciousness, always feels separation from Krishna because such a feeling of separation excels the feeling of meeting Krishna. At Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya taught the people of the world how with a feeling of separation one can develop his dormant love of Krishna. So these are different stages of love of God develop in time when a person seriously engages in devotional service. So one last thing from Krishna book we read in chapter 35. When the gopis were singing, they were in separation from Krishna during the day. Prabhupada says that when Krishna went to the forest with his coward friends and cows, the gopis did not physically take part, but their hearts went with him. And because their hearts went, they were able to enjoy his company through strong feelings of separation. To acquire the strong feeling of separation is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya and his direct disciplic succession of Goswamis. So we know the song, the six Goswamis in separation. So now I have an interesting comment here. It is written in the form of a poem, which I took during the retreat this year. Yeah, I don't remember where. Oh yeah, I think it was in Govardhan. So it's another little interesting point. By apparent consideration, Krishna left Vrindavan. By absolute consideration, Krishna stayed in Vrindavan, in Bhavarupa, in the hearts of the gopis. Now, here's a beautiful analogy. Akrura has come. Akrura is Mandara Mountain. You know what the significance of Mandara Mountain was in churning of the ocean of milk? Mandara Mountain was the churning rod. So Akrura is Mandara Mountain churning the ocean of Gokula. The moon of Krishna has come out. So from the churning came the moon. So Krishna has come out of Gokula and he's left Kalakuta poison in the heart of the Brijbasis. So such an analogy that the poison is left in the heart of the Brijbasis and the moon has come out from the churning of Akrura. Mother Earth is very tolerant, but she cannot tolerate. She's cracking from the wheels of Akrura's chariot. She cannot tolerate the sound. Then Lord Ram is mentioned. He's Maryada Purushottama, separation incomplete. Krishna is Lila Purushottam. The gopis remembered Ram Lila. They say, you're just like Ram who left Ayodhya with his brother, but Ram took Sita with him. You should take Radha. As Ram, you cruelly killed one Bali, but now you will kill many Balis or young girls. Actually, this will be mentioned in chapter 47 when Krishna sends Uddhava with a message to the gopis. And they'll be remembering Ram Lila and cursing Krishna that you were in your past life. We know your past life as Ram and how you were so cruel. Okay, so we'll stop here. Any questions or comments on these final verses? Yes.
What is unmanifest?
What is exactly unmanifest past? That's a good question. So what you don't see happening.
So that means the devotee can have it in the heart.
Mm-hmm, that's right. You don't see it externally. Aprakat lila means that lila which is externally not manifest. But you can have it in the heart, right. And that's where it was with the Brijbasis. They were having this aprakat lila in the heart, in their dreams, in their meditation. Krishna was coming, they were having pastimes. In visions. Sometimes Radharani would have a vision of Krishna. And that's aprakat, yes. Because it's not manifest here. It's called aprakat because it's not manifest in the material world. Prakat is that lila which is manifest in the material world. So what is not manifest here is in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan. But those Brijbasis who were in the prakat, in the manifested lila here, they were experiencing the aprakat lila. While Krishna was away from Vrindavan. Which is going on the spiritual world.
So
Krishna was with them in the aprakat feature. They were, I don't think you can figure it out though. Yes.
Can you please repeat, Akrura was the Mandara Mountain?
Mandara Mountain.
The ocean was?
He was churning the ocean of Gokula. And Krishna was the moon who came out of the churning.
But he left
the Kalakuta poison in the hearts of the Brijbasis. I heard this actually during the
Krishna
retreat.
Krishna left.
The moon came out.
No. Krishna left this Kalakuta
poison. He left the Kalakuta poison
in the hearts
of the Brijbasis. Yeah, I heard this during these last two retreats. There was quite a lot of material for my classes. actually. This was one gem that I got from that. And in my notes I would know which person said it, and more the reference. Could have been Madhavananda. Or it could have, yes, yeah, probably Madhavananda. Probably Madhavananda. In my notes I have it. I just took out these different parts. Yeah.
He also gave some, as far as I remember, Madhavananda, he gave some explanation of the word vipralamba, meaning lamba meaning obtaining, and vipra meaning in the distance.
Achha, yeah, I can't, yeah, I haven't, I don't remember that. It's in my notes.
It is obtaining, but obtaining in some special way.
At a distance, obtaining Krishna at a distance. Yeah. Yes.
I have a question. I don't know how appropriate it is, but from my experience is that sometimes when somebody is overly attached to you, it may be even annoying.
For you.
Yeah.
Someone's overly attached to you, it may be annoying for you.
So it seems that Krishna might be annoyed by somebody being too attached to you.
Achha.
Doesn't it?
Well, in the material world, there's unhealthy relationships. So unhealthy, one type of unhealthy relationship is if someone is overly attached and wants to cling and wants to just possess you. So this is an unhealthy way to express, to have a relationship. But with Krishna, it was reciprocal. As they were attached to him, he was attached to them. It was not like they were just clinging onto him and he didn't care. Actually, he was even more attached to them than they were to him. So the healthy relationship, it's both sides have this feeling. And it's not an unhealthy feeling. It's a very selfless feeling that I want what is best for the other person. So the gopis, I mean, they're separation, but I mean, the main thing is that they know Krishna is not going to be happy in Mathura. They know he's going to suffer. They know he's not going to be able to sleep at night. And they know only they can satisfy him and not the wives and the women of Mathura. They know that. So they're suffering because they know he's not going to be happy. Of course, they're not going to be happy either because they can't do their service of Vapu. But he will be. Yeah, there's unhealthy relationships, unhealthy expressions of love. Is even also they say codependent. When the two of them, they're dependent. But it's not out of self-sufficiency. Yes, they're not independent persons. They're kind of like merged into one, and without the other can't even tell the time of the day or whatever. They can't live. They can't function. They can't function without the other person. Or else it may be one-sided that one is clinging, and the other one is not. You know, doesn't have that same feeling. But here it's a very healthy love for Krishna, a selfless love. The clinging type is they want something usually. They're clinging because they're not complete and they're lacking something. And so then when they have that relationship with you, then that fulfills their vacancy or their need. They cannot be a complete person themselves. And so the gopis were, now, of course, in one sense, they could not be complete without Krishna. But also Krishna could not be complete without them. But this type of love is not also exclusive. It is for the whole world. It's for everyone. Nobody is excluded in Krishna Prema. It's for all living entities. But the type of person who is just clinging is like it's just that person wants his desires fulfilled. And regardless of how you feel about it, they just want to get themselves happy. And it doesn't matter if you want to cooperate with them or not. They just want to have their feeling of satisfaction. The gopis are not like that. They were very selfless, even in their separation. They knew that Krishna wouldn't be happy with the women of Mathura. They were just saying, oh, they'll be so fortunate. But actually they knew only Radharani can really make him happy, only the gopis. And so he'll be there, but he won't be completely satisfied.
Out of the whole world. Child of everybody.
Yes, Prabhupada had universal vision and universal love. As we heard today's Bhagavatam class, it was all about Prabhupada. How he went to the West because he desired to give those souls who never heard about Krishna, he desired to give them Krishna and to relieve their suffering. And so he was praying every month. He would go to Advaita Bhavan in Mayapur and he would pray there. And the pujari noticed him. And then finally, the last day before he was going to go on the boat, he went there and the pujari finally asked, "Who are you, you know? I've seen you here before, so many years." And he told him, "Yes, I have this mission I have to fulfill for my spiritual master." So that is love. That is real love. Not that he was not clinging to anybody, Prabhupada. He was only, of course, to the instructions of his spiritual master. That he was holding on to. And the holy name. That we can cling to. We can cling to spiritual things, the instructions of our spiritual master. Don't cling to the spiritual master. He may not appreciate it. That is an example of unhealthy love. But healthy, what would really make the spiritual master happy is if you follow his instructions and you're happy in your service to Krishna. If you're when you chant Hare Krishna, you're happy, then your guru will be pleased. Not if you go grab his feet, dive for his feet when he comes and give him all these praises, and when he goes away, then you forgot, what did he say? What did he tell me to do? Oh, and he goes away. So that's how we can, that is our training to how we can get this prema of the gopis. His training is from the spiritual master now. We become attached to him by being attached to his instructions. And then that we get purified and we see how we are becoming closer to Krishna and to him. Yeah, actually, there was another place in here. I must not have read it to you today. That, see, there's a different... Oh, well, we kind of touched on that. That in Mathura, there's a different mood. It's awe and reverence. And so, it was somewhere here. I didn't... Somehow I missed it. But Nanda and Yashoda, they accepted Krishna in a very familiar and friendly, very informal mood, whereas in Mathura and Dwaraka, it's very formal. Just like a good example. So it would disturb, it would clash. And how could he be with Nanda and Yashoda and Vasudeva and Devaki, two sets of parents in the same place? How could he be like? It would not be right. It couldn't be right that he has his, and the gopis and the queens together, can you imagine? It just wouldn't work. Just wouldn't. I mean, the gopis are so, you know, they're like the paramours, and the queens would be, I mean, he's our husband, you know. They would have a fight, a huge fight, I'm sure. But the example is Gopakumar when he went to Vaikuntha. His nature was a cowherd boy. And that nature was to be very, informal. And one time he just started playing his flute and singing Brijbasi songs in Vaikuntha in front of Narayan. And the other residents came and said, excuse me, but you cannot talk like this here. You have to say the Vedic hymns, and you know, it's very formal. And if, you know, take that flute somewhere else, and you don't belong here, you know. So if they went to Dwarka and Mathura in their mood, then it just would clash. And imagine if the queens came with Krishna to visit Vrindavan with all their opulence and all these things and their possessiveness of Krishna. That he's ours, he's our husband. And then Krishna would want to get out to have the Ras Lila, and the queen said, "No, you stay, you're my husband, you stay here with me tonight. Why you want to go to Ras Lila? You're our husband." It just wouldn't work.
When you say queen, you're referring to Devaki?
No. When he gets married. He'll get married, it'll be a different mood. But we will hear, he will have some pastimes. Next year we'll read, we'll have a summary of Lalita Madhava also, which is from Krishna Sangati, which I will reduce, I will condense more, so we can be hearing that, how he actually had these pastimes in Dwaraka, in New Vrindavan. They are the gopis, but they're in a different mood. I mean, Satyabhama would not tolerate Yes, but even though when they become married to Krishna, then the mood changes. When they're, as long as they're not married and they're gopis, it's different. It's parakya. The other is swakya. So it's two different moods. Yes. Well, there is a verse in Bhagavatam, first canto, 11th chapter, which is often quoted to prove that Krishna goes back to Vrindavan. It's a verse spoken by the residents of Dwarka, that when you go away to Vrindavan, Mathura, and other Hastinapur, other places, then we feel separation from you. So on the basis of this verse, he makes this whole argument that he does leave. And then from Garga Samhita and other books, we find that Uddhava went with a message to the gopis. Actually, we'll hear this, I think, this year. We'll hear, yes, in that part, we'll hear. And he promised the gopis he would bring Krishna back. And he went to Dwarka, he told everything, and he got Krishna, and he brought him back.
But this is not in Krishna book.
It's not in our Bhagavatam. No, it's not in our Bhagavatam. It's not in Krishna book. It's in other places. And then there's another time when the residents of Vrindavan went to Mathura to see the marriage of Krishna with his queens. That's another. They actually went to visit. So that's also not in our book. And then Krishna comes back again. Now I can't see. I haven't read this for some time. I believe Balaram also convinces him to go back. Yes, you remember?
He mentions there that the first time he comes after 6 months.
Acha.
He's coming every month.
And he comes every month.
As he promises.
As he promises.
So they just forget, because even when he's present, they sometimes get ecstasy.
So the first time it was after 6 months, and then after that it was every month, as he promised in Garga Samhita to Radharani. But they forget. They think, oh, he's gone. And then so he comes every month. Where does it mention that?
It's in Krishna Sangati.
Krishna Sangati, yeah, I didn't get the part there. It's probably near the end. I read this last year for the third time or something. But, yeah. Separation. Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said that. No, Prabhupada in the lecture on Kunti Devi said that. Kunti Devi's lectures is all about separation, actually. Because the whole purpose of Kunti's prayers was that Krishna was leaving and she was trying to convince him not to leave. Yeah, it's different. It's different. I mean, feelings of separation are there as well in Kunti, but it's not as the gopis. She had a parental relationship with Salyaras. Right. And all the bridge bossies. Yeah, they come to the point, actually, in this book that they don't know if they're in Goloka or Gokula, and they don't know if they can't distinguish where they are. They just know they're with Krishna, somehow or other. And they don't even know if he's separated or he's there. They just, they're just with him, that always. Right. Right. So they're always with him. They're always in union, whether externally or internally. Not only see, they can be in it. Yeah, so our deep absorption should first be on the order of our spiritual master. And that by following that order, we can get the absorption on Krishna Lila. First we follow our spiritual master, then we have to accept the lotus feet of the six Goswamis, study Nectar of Devotion, and then we get the mercy of Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, and then we can get Radha Krishna. It's not we just go to Radha Krishna and say, okay, I'm just going to meditate on Leela of Radha and Krishna, and by that absorption, I'm going to be in union. No, there's a process for us, conditioned souls. We are not the gopis. So therefore, we have to go through our spiritual master, and he will recommend us to Krishna and to Radharani. Here is a sincere devotee. Please accept this devotee as your servant. But by chanting the holy name, we go through these different levels of realization. And that is, we chant and we do our service for our spiritual master. So by chanting the holy name, And we progress from nishta to ruchi to all the higher levels. So that's part of our service to our spiritual master. And that's actually the means for this age of Kali to get our swarup, our self-realization, by chanting the holy name.
But when in Bhagavad Gita, this verse, when he says that those who open this very confidential secret to my devotees,
yes, preach.
The pure devotional service is guaranteed, and he will enter into my abode.
Right.
Promises. So it means opening the secret, preaching the Krishna consciousness.
Yes, Prabhupada gave us this method of preaching, and Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita to preach.
So it also purifies the heart and prepares one to be absorbed in Krishna's lila.
Yes. Anybody else? Yes, Kishuku.
I just want a little bit more about this, just briefly, because now Rishi said that Krishna is coming once a month.
That's what he promised.
Well,
oh, he found it. Okay, let him read.
Well, if I can just finish my question. Then you
okay,
can
go ahead.
I just don't understand, because we were just having a whole conversation how he went for 100 years, and but once a month is a lot. I mean, story in the Bible, so I don't understand why it's so esoteric. If he's coming once a month, it's like that's who he is as a person. It's not like, I understand if he came once or twice in secret, you know, but yeah. Every month, like what, is he coming for a night or for 2 minutes or for a weekend? Like if your husband comes once a weekend in a month and the rest of the time he's away working, that's a relationship. So I don't understand why it's like he never came back and he's not in Vrindavan. You know what I mean? Like,
okay.
Because I don't want to preach to people like... Okay,
well, you shouldn't talk about these things.
If talking about, you know, like basic things, like it might come up, basic things, and then you make a statement, well,
yeah.
Krishna left Vrindavan and never came back, but...
Oh, he did come back.
You have to be clear.
Even in Bhagavatam, he came back in the commentaries. After killing Dantavakra, that's official. That's official in the Bhagavatam purports. After killing Dantavakra, he came back and took all the residents of Vrindavan back to Godhead. But it wasn't, the reason why it wasn't mentioned in Bhagavatam is because Parikshit was hearing the story. And he would hear how such a nice way the Brijabasis went back, and then he'll hear how horrible way his ancestors went back. They were killed each other in Dwaraka Lila. So therefore, Sukadeva refrained from mentioning it in Bhagavatam, that actually Krishna, even officially in the Bhagavatam commentaries, there is a point where he did go back. When he was in Mathura, he went to Mathura to kill Dantavakra. And then he went to Vrindavan for 2 months. So even in Prakatlila, he was away from Dwaraka for 2 months in Vrindavan and enjoying pastimes. And then he took them all in their self-same bodies. They went back to Godhead. Okay, so that's one. Okay, now what is this reference? You got it? Where is it?
Yeah, it's Lagu Bhagavatamrita by Srila Prabhupada Goswami.
Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Is this from Krishna Sangita?
Yes. It's in an introduction, if you follow the
introduction.
Footnotes, it's 20, it's footnote, back end note 26.
Oh. Yeah, I had that endnote. I was reading that. I thought that was...
The subsection, Krishna's return to Vrindavan.
Oh, okay, I got it. I opened to the page. Okay.
So it says 3 months.
Okay, the title of this book derives from Sri Rupa Goswami's Lagu Bhagavatamrita, in which he describes Krishna's return to Vrindavan. During the Lord's Prakat... Why don't I sing the Sanskrit? While I'm at it, we have time. Prajapakatalilayam chinmasam virahomana tachapyajani visfurti prader pava pamahari shimasya paratas jesham saksha krishnena sangati. So krishnena sangati is in the last line. During the Lord's prakat pastimes, the people of Braj were separated from him for 3 months. Lord Krishna then reappeared among them and spent 3 months with them. The words Krishna Sangati therefore indicate the Brijbasis meeting with Krishna. So this is from Rupa Goswami's Laghu Bhagavatamrita. And that is actually being translated now by, I think it's ready. He finished Gopi Pranadana in Govardhan. It's published. It's in Rasabihari Law. Well, Laghu Bhagavatamrita by Rupa Goswami. So there's a book to get. Rupa Goswami. So this talks about, so you can just pick up that book before you leave. That will be helpful for you. The words Krishnena Sangati indicate the Brijavasis meeting with Krishna. Sri Rupa Goswami explains the word Sangati in two ways, appearance and return. He then gives substantial shastric evidence to support both readings. But in whichever way one understands the word Sangati, Rupa Goswami's conclusion is that after Krishna left Vrindavan for Mathura, he again met the Brijavasis in Braj. Srimad Bhagavatam thrice records Krishna's promise to return to Vrindavan, but with the exception of one shloka, this is the one I was telling you, 111.9, which alludes to his visiting Mathura district, there is no mention in the Bhagavatam of Krishna fulfilling his promise. Laghu Bhagavatamrita, however, firmly establishes Krishna's return to Vrindavan, and had Sri Rupa Goswami not done so, it would have appeared that Krishna did not keep his word. Of all revealed scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam carries the greatest authority. Therefore, Sri Rupa Goswami goes to great lengths to prove how the aforementioned Bhagavatam verse, 111.9, clearly substantiates that Krishna repeatedly returned to Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada translates this verse as follows. Now I'll sing. Yaryam Bhuja Shapasasara Bhavan Kurun Maturnavata Surin Dirikshaya Nitapakoti Patimakshana Bhave Ravim Vinakshanar Ivanast Taya Chichan. O Lotus-eyed Lord, whenever you go away to Mathura, Vrindavan, or Hastinapur to meet your friends and relatives, every moment of your absence seems like a million years. O infallible one, at that time our eyes become useless, as if bereft of the sun. The Dwarkavasis spoke these words when Krishna returned to Dwarka after the Kurukshetra war. So the word Yarhi, whenever, indicates Krishna's repeated outings to the land of the Kurus and Madhus. No one argues that Krishna visited the Kurus. Srimad Bhagavatam clearly describes his visits to the Pandavas. But how should we understand the word Madhun, which refers to the land of the Madhu clan? Rupa Goswami explains as follows. O lotus-eyed Lord, you have gone, Bhavan, up Susara to Mathura, Madhun, eagerly desiring to see Nanda Maharaj and your other friends and relatives there, Suri Didikshaya. There may be some doubt about interpretation of the word Madhun, since it may mean either Mathura or Vrindavan. Rupa Goswami says, therefore, the word Madhun means the village of Braj in the district of Mathura. Because the city of Mathura cannot be meant here, the friends referred to are the Lord's friends in Braj. So why can't the word Madhun refer to Mathura city? Because when Jarasandha attacked Mathura city, Krishna took his close friends among the Madhus to Dwarka. That's the only friends the Dwarka Vasis could have been referring to at the time they spoke this verse, were the Brijavasis. So when in Bhagavatam the word is Madhu, you go to visit the Madhus. So it's not the Mathura Vasi, because all the Mathura Vasis moved to Dwarka. So nobody was there who he could visit. So therefore it was the Brijavasis. Srila Swami, in his commentary in this verse, also says the word Madhun refers to the residence of Vrindavan, which is situated in the district of Mathura. Srila Goswami further substantiates Krishna's return to Vrindavan, quoting a passage from Padma Purana. These verses narrate Sri Krishna's fight with Dantavakra in front of the gates of Mathura, and Krishna's subsequent visit to Braj, where he gives pleasure to the Brijavasis for 2 months before returning to Dwarka. So this is in our Bhagavatam, in the chapter on the killing of Dantavakra, you find a huge purport. And this Padma Purana is quoted, how Krishna visited for 2 months, he went to Vrindavan. Srila Sanatana Goswami and Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in their commentaries to Srimad Bhagavatam also confirmed this episode of Krishna's return to Vrindavan. And Srila Jiva Goswami goes one step further to base the final portion of his Gopal Champu entirely upon the historical authenticity of Padma Purana. In 9 lengthy chapters, Jiva elaborates in detail Krishna's Braja pastimes in the 2 months following Dantavakra's death. Such evidence presented by highly respected acharyas should be eradicate any doubt that Krishna returned to the Brajbasis. The question arises, why does Bhagavatam not discuss Krishna's return to Braj? Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur answers this question in his commentary on 10.78.16. When Krishna returned to Vrindavan, he gave great pleasure to his relatives and childhood friends, and before returning to Dwaraka, he miraculously expanded himself and took the plenary expansions of the Brajbasis to the spiritual world. Shukadev thought Parikshit Maharaj might wonder how Krishna, who caused the cowherds to attain Vaikuntha in their self-same bodies, could also have caused the residents of Dwarka to attain such an inauspicious end in the Moshala Lila. Thus, Shukadev withheld this pastime from Parikshit, even though the Uttarakhanda Shri Padma Purana recounts it, because Parikshit Maharaj, due to his own affinity for the Yadus, might have considered Krishna unfair. Yet even, I'll keep reading a little bit here. Even without the substantial evidence given by Sri Rupa, the reasoning of Sri Vishwanath, or the testimony of other acharyas, devotees familiar with Krishna's personality accept his own integrity as evidence enough that he kept his word. Such devotees know that wonderful Krishna is truthful, grateful, gentle, and compassionate. They know that he is completely honorable. He is the protector of surrendered souls, the well-wisher of his devotees, and ultimately love controls him. Such endearing qualities make it impossible for Hari to deceive his dearest devotees. Both Rupa and Jiva Goswami quote Uddhava, who reassured Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda of the truthfulness of their son's words. Krishna has promised he will come back to Vrindavan after finishing his business in Mathura. This promise he will surely fulfill. Jiva comments on this quote, Krishna must have returned to Braj, for otherwise Uddhava would have spoken a lie. And after Krishna's declaration in Gita, his devotee never perishes, it appears even more unlikely that he would make his devotee into a liar than lie himself. It should be doublessly clear then that after having promised the Brajbasis he would return to Vrindavan, Krishna did return. But as will be disclosed in Krishna Sangati, the reason Krishna came back was not that he was a moralist concerned for his reputation, or even that he possessed a wealth of transcendental qualities that made him unfailing in his word. Krishna returned to Vrindavan because of his most endearing characteristic, prema vashya, love controls him. So, I didn't find, where does it say every month? Doesn't say. Doesn't say every month. Okay.
His promise is mentioned every month.
That was his promise. So, yeah, okay, we have to find that then. Maybe near the end, near the end perhaps.
Still, for the bodies it was like one yuga.
Yeah, they have no concept of time.
I don't know, this point was just that he's
no, alive. Not that he, that was in respect to something else. That he broke his promise that he said, I cannot repay you. I mean, he broke his promise in Bhagavad Gita, where he says, "Ye yatamam prapadyante," as they follow me, I reciprocate with them. As those surrender to me, then I reward them accordingly. So that promise he broke from Bhagavad Gita with the gopis, because he said, "I could not repay you. I could not reciprocate your love. As you have loved me, I could not love you." And we said many reasons why he broke that. That's the thing. Don't get confused here now. That
I thought it was something else.
Right, it's very soon. It's very
still before his first visit, so that yeah. Maybe is why we're confused.
Yeah, so the first visit most probably was Uddhava bringing him back. The first visit. Because immediately after he killed Kamsa, he sent Nanda Maharaj back, and then immediately after, then he went to Gurukul. When he came back, he sent Uddhava as soon as he got back from Gurukul. So that was, Gurukul took him maybe about 3 months being in Gurukul. No?
It can be because Uddhava spent 3 months in Vrindavan.
No, I'm saying Krishna...
And after 3 months...
Oh, that's true.
So Uddhava was the
same. Doesn't work out chronologically with time here.
I don't think it worked out, though, because when Uddhava comes, they definitely haven't seen him.
He's coming.
Hare Purusha is convinced. Yeah. See, he's coming back, and here also, so you get that book, Lagu Bhagavatamrita, and you can quote this verse from the first canto, as Rupa Goswami has, to prove that Krishna did go back to Vrindavan. He did return. And then you can read, see, all the Puranas, I mean, of all the Puranas, Bhagavat Purana is the spotless one. So, I mean, even in the other Puranas, Krishna's pastimes are mentioned. So in Padma Purana, it's there. Why isn't it there in the Bhagavad Purana? Because it was mentioned because of the audience was Parikshit Maharaj. So he would not appreciate hearing how nicely the rest of the Brijbasis went back, and here's relatives, they killed each other, seemingly. It appeared they had an inauspicious departure. Any other questions or comments? Yeah, he's the same. It's like he never left. And they think, oh, it was just a bad dream we had, that he left. We were just imagining he left. Actually, he didn't leave. He makes them forget separation.
What about the point being as miserable?
Yeah, so some thought might be there that he might leave. And I mean, they don't remember him going to Mathura, but there's some apprehension there that he could leave. Perhaps they do remember him going to... Sometimes they may remember. Who knows? But... Yeah, I come every night. That was Garga Samhita. In Chaitanya Chaitamrita too. Yeah, Garga Samhita, he promised he will come every night. So it's confirmed in Chaitanya Chaitamrita. That's nice. He says, I come every night to you. And that is also confirmed, and we hear how he is in Dwarka, and he's absorbed in the pastimes of Braj at nighttime when he's asleep. And the queens, they can't do anything to get him out of that. And he's in Braj at night. But they think it's a dream. And the Brijbasis think, oh, it's just a dream. Anything else in these verses? Now you feel better?
Inconceivable.
Oh, that's a very good conclusion. Now you have agreed with the acharyas. You're in agreement. Yes, we can't understand. The space, the time is a whole different dimension, and we're not exactly in that dimension. We're not there. So it's hard for us to comprehend what it means to be in that dimension of the spiritual world.
Suffering.
Yeah, this is the... So, I used to have that reaction too. I feel like it's the Mayavadi impersonal tendency in us that's afraid of emotions. That when we hear these...
There are places where you can be with Krishna without such drastic emotions.
But emotions, I mean, it's the whole thing. That's the whole.
So this is for the high.
The happiness is that when they're in separation from Krishna, they're with Krishna more intensely than they are when he's there. Because, even ordinary example, you lose something, I think that was given there, you lose your money, then you're much more intensely thinking of it than before when it was in your pocket. You never thought, okay, no problem, here's my money. When it goes, then, oh, where's my money? Where did it go? Then you're really getting intense about it. It's much more intense. Yeah. Okay, the distress in Goloka dances on the heads of all the happiness and bliss ticking together. That means of all the there or here? Or anywhere, okay. There and here. Their distress. Yeah. If you remember when Krishna left the gopis in Rasa-lila, then their condition was they were so much with Krishna. They thought they were Krishna. So how could they be... Then their suffering went away, actually. When they thought, I am Krishna, or when they were imitating his pastimes, then their suffering of separation actually went away because they were so intensely thinking of him. It's like... And he also entered them. They became one with him like that in his mind. Yeah.
Seems like our understanding was like that verse 4:10, isn't it? Vitaraga Bhayakrodha.
Vitaraga Bhayakrodha.
Was our...
our own enjoyment and happiness. Yeah, so when we see in our selfish way, and then we may be afraid. Because, oh, I cannot enjoy there. I cannot be happy there. I will be suffering there. I will be in. I will be dying there, even though it's the...
Nobody forces anybody to go to Raj. There's Mathura.
Yeah, right. You want opulence? Go to Vaikuntha.
Yeah,
no problem. Very, yes, Krishna is, Narayan is there, Vasudeva is there. You can just be with him and have a good time. If you go to Braj, then more emotions, intimate relationship. And when you're intimate with someone, then you suffer. You suffer a lot. Because if the person goes or if he does something, then your whole day is ruined. They're in the same. Their concern is more for Radharani than for Krishna. And so when Radharani is unhappy, they're unhappy. Like that. Madhurya Bhav. Madhurya. He brought Madhurya Leela, Ujjala, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita. Madhurya. How about what is this mood? The mood is separation.
Separation. The service
in
separation.
Yeah, service and separation.
Seva.
That is the mood.
Seva in
Madhurya mood is service and separation.
So this is actually a material process as a service for them, or is it distance?
It is included. It is included. But Lord Chaitanya did not discuss this with anyone except 3.5 confidential associates. So it's not like he brought it and put it on the internet and, you know, it was all over the world in no time. He just brought the chanting of the holy name for the masses. The holy name. That is for the serious
context,
devotees.
Context is gives this material right. For the especially the last one.
Yes.
It's actually Radharani says.
Right, the last one.
Yeah.
But where are we in that list of the Shikshastika? We are in the second one mostly.
Yeah.
We're on number 2. It's hard to get past number 3. Janarapi Sunichena Toroiva. That is Nishta. So first, we know the goal. That's very nice to know the goal. But for ourselves, we have to be practical and try to develop the qualities of the third verse. And after, if we get that right, then we can progress to the higher levels. Kisha Supini?
I was learning this verses about Govinda Damodara Madhava.
Govinda Damodara Madhava. Pardon me?
Many verses. No.
Who was writing it? What?
There's a poem.
Oh, there's a poem. Okay, I don't know that. I don't know. You know? I don't know. I don't know this. Okay, so we'll stop here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.